Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll. I feel you're going to stay. Lonely nights that come, memories that blow,
bringing you back again, hurting me more and more. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out about reconnecting with nature. That's a key for health of people and the planet, so says University of Plymouth, which is in the United Kingdom. And we have a lot more on that. Then we're going to have an interview with Ralph Nader. He'll be on the line, and he's going to talk about Trump's assault against the nation and the Democrats' incompetence to take him to task. Then, if time permits, and I'm not going to cut Ralph short, we will do a really powerful investigative report on everything that's wrong with wicked Wikipedia and why we should be walking away from it and why there should be a congressional hearing on it. And we're going to ask you to read the article, and it'll be posted front and center on PRN.fm. It's fully documented. It's a really scholarly piece, as you will hear. And no editorializing, no personal animosity, just facts. And the facts do not bode well for the editors, the administrators, Jimmy Wells, the board, or Wikipedia's future. After you hear it, then it's time for you to become proactive, to read it, and if you agree with it, share it with your legislators and ask for congressional investigation and open hearings. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. And I cannot tell you how many times when counseling people who had different conditions, I said, how much time do you spend alone, quietly in nature, just in silence? And a woman that I was counseling said, well, not often because all my responsibilities. And I said, where do you fit in your responsibilities? And she just smiled and said, well, don't get there very often where I'm taking care of myself. I said, well, why don't we start this way? Let's see how we can rebalance your day. You tell me everything you do in a day. Let's see what we can do to rebalance that so every single day your intellectual capacity, your creative capacities, your emotional, spiritual capacities, your nutritional capacities are all actualized. It took maybe an hour and a half. And the next thing you know, about 2 weeks later, this person sent me an email and said, spending time at the botanical gardens. Now, I wasn't sure whether it was Bronx or Brooklyn. They're both wonderful. And just sitting in nature. Well, if you have a botanical garden near you, wherever you're living, take advantage. If not, if there's a park, get into some green time. It's extremely important. And every single study shows that it will help your immune system. So according to this University of Plymouth study, individuals who visit natural spaces weekly and feel psychologically connected to them report better physical and mental well-being. Alongside the benefits to public health, those who make weekly nature trips or feel connected to nature are also more likely to behave in ways which promote environmental health, such as recycling and conservation activities. So this was published in the Journal of Environmental Psychology. So it simply states reconnecting with nature could be a key to achieving synergistic improvements to human and planetary health. It's also a good place to do mindful meditation. Also from Biosystem, the University of Graz, pumpkin seed extract, or eating pumpkin seeds, for men with benign prostatic hyperplasia or enlarged prostate or inflamed prostate could lead to prostate cancer. It's a benefit. Now, there's three universities involved, one in Austria, one in Germany, and one in Switzerland. They investigated the effects of the pumpkin seed extract on the symptoms of benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH. The results were published in the Journal of Medical Food. The majority of the men were able to find benefit. And benefits can range from not having to urinate as frequently, generally during the night. The swelling goes down substantially. And you don't end up having just partial voiding of urine. There's a free flow. Because a lot of men with enlarged prostate or prostate conditions will tell you that they feel like there's still urine, but they can't get it out, and it's frequently burning or there's pain. So this was a 12-week supplementation, and it alleviated significantly the problems that we're having. Something as simple as pumpkin seeds. From the University of South Florida and also Fundan University, which is in China, researchers have shown that regular practice of Tai Chi, T-A-I-C-H-I, increases your brain volume and augments memory and thinking skills and combats dementia. Wow, that's terrific. And this was a randomized controlled trial. So it just showed that practicing Tai Chi increases brain volume and you end up with better thinking. So, something to do. There are generally classes in every city because more and more people are using Tai Chi. Also, from Vanderbilt University comes a study. New research shows how inflammation can alter your view of the world. Quite simply, they're saying that inflammation changes our thinking. Now, what's that mean? Well, let's look at the larger perspective. In the last several decades, we've increasingly understood that chronic inflammation plays a major negative role in our health. It absolutely contributes to the risk of developing diabetes, hypertension, dementia, cancer, heart disease. More recently, research has revealed that the effects of inflammation reach much deeper into our physiology. Now, the new data have demonstrated that inflammation changes the way we think, altering our mood and even our decision-making. This powerful information has significant implications for public health and individual health. The idea that inflammation affects our brains and our thinking is not all that novel. Higher levels of inflammation are commonly seen in illness. In fact, up to 80% of critically ill patients requiring ICU or intensive care in a hospital develop delirium, a condition described as the new development of confusion or otherwise altered mental status. And though many factors contribute to delirium, it's now thought that the sickness-related inflammatory response in the brain drives some of these cognitive changes. Now, of course, it's one thing for hospitalized patients to show changes in their thinking. They're very sick, and they're also in a stressful foreign environment. But think back to the last time you had the flu or cold. Chances are, you didn't feel your brain was at its best. Your emotions were not at their most optimistic. In fact, research has shown that to be accurate. So, one of the things I tell people, and I've seen this firsthand, before you allow for a living will to give someone else the right to say, stop all feeding, let them die, understand when people have cancer or some other debilitating condition that medicine's not really that good at helping, you're in a certain mind, a mind of fear, anger, depression, because you know that it's the end of something, your life, and all that you valued and treasured. And so there's this sense of apathy, give it up. And so people who could have been helped, if we had an actual democracy in healthcare and freedom of choice, which we do not, we have fascism in healthcare, those people might have known that there are other therapies. For example, hyperbaric oxygen therapy to help people with stroke. I know someone who had a stroke, did not take my advice to get hyperbaric oxygen therapy, went the orthodox route, and about a year later had not made any major improvements, and just simply told me, there's no reason for me to live. The things I enjoyed, I can't do anymore. And I said, but you haven't done any of the things that have shown you could reverse it. Well, if they were that important, my doctor would have known. that's assuming your doctor knows everything. Now, they may want to believe that they know everything, but they don't. You have no idea how many times Orthodox physicians have come in my office with their own wives, husbands, children, parents, including from Sloan Kettering, because there was nothing more within their armamentarium of tools they could use. So they had, out of desperation, to try something completely different. And it worked. Now, did that mean it changed their perception? They went back and started to share that with colleagues? Not at all. Because there's a price you pay for being open in a society medically that is completely, totally, 100% closed to innovation, unless they can control the innovation and profit from it. Follow the money in medicine. Who's behind that money? Wall Street, Big Pharma, venture capitalist. And you'll see that there's complete acceptance for what they're doing and complete shutdown for anything else. So when you have someone saying, why don't you just go out and relax and spend some time in nature? Don't make decisions that are important to your life when you're in pain, when you're depressed, because you could be making the wrong choices. And this happens all the time. I believe that we should have a whole ethos that when a person has been deemed irreversible, when they've been told go home or go to hospice care, that then there should be by law the opportunity to try alternative therapies, at least those therapies that have been shown by experiencing clinical observation to have helped people. After all, if there's no downside, you're going to die, why not be open? I believe that we should be, but we're not. I don't care where you go, you're not going to find that openness in American medicine, unfortunately. From MIT and the University of Cyprus comes a study that just simply increasing hand hygiene at the top 10 airports could reduce the spread of coronavirus by 37%. Now, coronavirus is spreading. Now, I watched a video. I do not know if it is accurate. I have not been able to independently confirm it. But it was a video of a billionaire, alleged billionaire, Chinese business person, not taken in China, where he's saying that there's 1.5 million people infected, over 50,000 dead, and he has firsthand knowledge that they've been burning the bodies so they didn't have to count them as part of the deceased, and that it's far worse than anyone around the world knows. It may or may not be true. At least it's worth investigating. And then someone posted something on my Facebook showing the back of a label of one of those antiseptic sprays that you spray on countertops, and one of the ingredients was coronavirus. Now, if anyone has one of those cleansers that you spray and kill 99% of the bacteria, right now, while we're on the air, go read the back of the label and see if that was photoshopped or whether it was real. And if it was real, then the question is, what in the world were they doing putting a coronavirus into a product? Didn't know that. Now, it might have been fake, in which case then, you know, so be it. It's just fake. But what if it's real? What does that mean? We now know that a virus, not just the coronavirus, other viruses can live up to 9 days on surfaces. Now just think of what I've said many times about the importance of washing your hands, but also being conscious of simple things. Things such as I just take a paper towel, put it in my pocket, and I have a little tiny bottle of alcohol, just isopropyl alcohol. And when I get someplace, let's say if I get into a car, I simply use that paper towel on the doorknob because I don't know who's been opening and closing that. If I'm taking a subway downtown, I'll simply put alcohol on the paper towel and just hold a strap. Nobody even sees I have it in my hand. I'm not drawing attention to myself. But at least I'm not going to pick up whatever it was from thousands upon thousands of people who cough and sneeze and could have viruses, bacteria, parasites that are on their hand. Now it's on that surface. Think of how toxic the surfaces areas are in hospitals. That's one of the reasons you get MRSA. So let's just pay really strong attention to hygiene. Wash everything before you eat it. I do what I call triple wash. I spray a Surfacin on it, just a non-toxic. You could use apple cider vinegar. And you rinse three times. Agitate it with your hands to get, you know, especially with lettuces. Then rinse three times, you wash it. And just keep a bottle of alcohol with paper towels so all of your own surface areas are clean. Because people don't realize how many times in the day they touch their mouth, touch their nose. They could be shedding. For example, you could get a flu shot and come home thinking you've done the right thing. And whether or not you get a flu vaccine or not, that's your business. But you're shedding that. And that's viruses coming out. You're unaware of that. You touch your nose, then you touch the telephone, you touch your keypad, you touch your mouse, touch your refrigerator door. Now you can rebound infection. You can reinfect yourself. You brush your teeth, you take that toothbrush, you can reinfect yourself. I'm talking about simple hygiene, something that we should have been taught in school. And in fact, in Japanese schools, when the children go to school, they do the janitorial services. And they disinfect their desks, their seats. They do all the cooking. They're meticulous and detailed in their hygiene. We're not. So just something to pay attention to. And one last thing. So just remember, if you're traveling, airports are just one big incubator. It's like a Petri dish. Just wherever possible, if you're going to get a mask, get a good mask. 50% of the contaminated air comes through the size of the mask where your cheeks are. Get a mask that adheres to your cheeks. It's a little more expensive, maybe $2 or $3 or $5 more. But boy, is it worth it. So at least you're protecting yourself. And when you're on an airplane, just put some simple protection around your eyes because the eyes are a vector, susceptible to vectors. And they studied London Heathrow Airport, Los Angeles, John F. Kennedy, Charles de Gaulle, Dubai, Frankfurt, Hong Kong, Beijing, San Francisco, and Amsterdam. And that's where they found that hand washing makes a difference by 57%. So that's important. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Ralph Nader. And we're going to talk about what are the Democrats thinking? Do they realize they could be making actions that are then going to lead to President Trump being reelected? What's wrong? Ralph Nader will give us his insights. Please stay with us.
Oh, my love, my darling, I've hungered for your touch a long, lonely time. And time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much.
We're going to be speaking with Ralph Nader in just a moment. Jesse will let us know when he's on the phone. And let me just mention that there's a real assault against WBAI. And the Los Angeles Times just published an article I just read this morning. It was so biased, so one-sided. There is definitely a coup afoot. And they're trying to get people to vote yes on changing the bylaws. Well, I do not support the bylaws. I've never supported the bylaws, and I don't support the whole governance system the way it is because it doesn't work. It's led to the catastrophe we're in today, that and a lot of poor management and professional management. But the new bylaws would, in effect, make it so easy for a group of people who are selecting themselves to decide what to do to pay off a $3.2 million debt that Pacifica owes that it cannot pay. It's paying over 7.2% interest now, which is insane. And that debt is collateralized by all of Pacifica's real estate, meaning the buildings in Los Angeles, Texas, and Berkeley that Pacifica owns. So when you have the word, it's your choice what you do, but just understand behind all these supposed good intentions to change the bylaws, there's some very maniacal intentions to trade, swap, or sell WBI's license, and they would have the power to do it. So please keep that in mind. Thank you. Now let's go over. Ralph is on the line now, and he doesn't really need an introduction unless you're very young. Without a second, Ralph Nader is one of the most influential Americans during the past 50 years. He is directly responsible for many of our most important bills that have provided protection to consumers against the onslaughts of corporate short-term profits and the Friedmanite free market, unregulated capitalism that we have now. He also gave us our Freedom of Information Act, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air and Energy Act, the Whistleblower Protection Act, the Wholesome Food Act, and over 140 others. Graduated from Princeton and Harvard Universities, and of course, I voted for Ralph each time he ran, but we were only a small group of progressives who did so. But the good news is Ralph has the Ralph Nader Radio Hour every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. His website is nader.org or csrl.org. Nice to have you with us again, Ralph.
Thank you very much, Gary.
My foremost question is whether or not Congress and the American public are taking Trump too lightly. Are we falling into the same trap as with Bush's first term when Americans realized they had elected an idiot, but then consoled themselves into saying, well, it's only for 4 years. In the meantime, the enormous damage that has been caused during Trump's 4 years is only casually being realized. And I believe there is a strong possibility he will again, if Democrats don't get their act together and stop cannibalizing each other and actually do something that represents an improvement in the quality of our life and nature, whatever you choose, there are 100 things they could do, and they haven't done anything that I can see that would be why we should reelect them. So what are we to do at this moment? The forum is yours.
Well, first, not to be defeatist like a lot of the Democrats are. He's the most vulnerable president we've ever had, the most impeachable president, and he has violated all kinds of laws, enriched himself and his family. He's taught the young people in America you can lie by the hour and on serious matters and get away with it. He's a relentless, savage sexual predator, a bigot, a racist, and he follows up with action, not just words. And he's a warmonger. He thinks he's king, he likes it. He praises dictatorships around the world, and he says, oh, if we only had that kind of power. And last year, as you recall, he made the statement, with Article 2, I can do whatever I want as president. I mean, that right there is an unconstitutional, impeachable pattern of behavior. And he wasn't just talking and joking. He's actually trying to do it, interfering with the prosecutors and the Justice Department situation that's in the headlines today. But as far as the kitchen table issues out there, Gary, I mean, he hasn't just deregulated. He has shredded, dismantled, and disabled the federal agencies whose mission from Congress is to save lives, prevent injuries, and prevent diseases, and advance nutrition. I mean, he is now polluting the school lunch program with junk food when it was starting to turn around and improve the health of kids. He wants to take away food stamps from hundreds of thousands of people. He wants to push a further tax cut for the wealthy, which includes for himself. Imagine, he's actually pushing for a tax cut that will save him and his family millions of dollars a year. How about that for a conflict of greedy interest? And it's all the money he puts into bloated military budget beyond what the generals asked for. They don't know how to spend it. And he takes it away from rebuilding the schools, the public transit, bridges, highways, drinking water, sewage systems of America, which would create a lot of good jobs and can't be exported. And that's only for starters. So he should be easily defeated. I mean, when the Democrats say, well, who among our candidates has electability, that's a totally defeatist attitude. Anybody who the Democrats nominate should beat this criminal warlord in the White House who's drunk with his own power. He has shut down the one agency that regulates Wall Street and your credit card company and your bank and your insurance company and your home mortgage, and he boasts about it. The thing about Trump is he doesn't hide anything, so he gives us the evidence. We just all we have to do is quote him, like we have in this new book Mark Green and I just put out called Fake President. It's a book not just to be read, but to be used by voters, by precinct organizers, by get-out-the-vote people, and by people who want to have a powerful conversation with Trump voters all over the country. It's full of facts, broken down very, very easily for conversational purposes, and I've written an epilogue addressed to the Trump voter. I don't give up on any voters, Gary.
Good for you. In my personal opinion, the Democrats are suffering from cognitive dissonance, and that, in part, is their inability to acknowledge their own party, the Clintons and Obama administration's role in creating the economic and social conditions that brought Trump into office.
Yes, indeed.
And would you address that? Because unless the Democrats own up to this, at least acknowledge that what they didn't do for the American public, the unionists, I've spoken with hundreds of union members who their whole life were card-carrying Democrats and voted for the Democrats, who voted for Trump because they said we were tired of being lied to and used with platitudes, nice speeches, and nothing happened to help us. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, of course. Well, I've written a book on this called On the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Gave Us Trump. I could have added how Clinton, Bush and Obama gave us Trump. Yeah, they ignored working families. They refused to step up and really increase the minimum wage, as Obama promised in his 2008 campaign. And they controlled Congress completely in 2009, 2010, as well as the White House. Yeah, they were more than indifferent. They were almost contemptuous as they raised more and more money from Wall Street than even the Republicans did. And they allowed big business to deindustrialize America in towns all over the country, from Akron to Flint to everywhere, emptying out factories, sending them to communist fascist dictatorships abroad who know how to put workers in their place, a buck an hour and no unions. And they called it free trade. It was really great. Yeah, those shoes came back from China. They were built with surf labor. Did they reduce the price of those Nike shoes? Huh? Did they reduce the price? No. The corporate bosses kept the excess profits. And the Democrats wanted to do more with the Trans-Pacific trade agreement deal. It would have given us more NAFTA-type situations. No, they were completely surrendered the standards of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. They turned their back. They talked good about consumer environmental protection, but they didn't do that much. Of course, compared to Trump, they look pretty good today. But they brought us Trump. Hillary gave us Trump. Let's face that. It's really amazing how, you know, Gary, when a third-party candidate gets a few votes, they blame the third-party candidate for any difference. But I don't hear any Democrats saying, hey, Hillary, you not only destroyed Libya and Mali with an illegal, brutal war that even Secretary of Defense Gates opposed you on, but he lost the battle because you went to Obama and convinced him. You gave us Donald Trump. I know she'll say she won the popular vote by 3 million, and she did, but they haven't opposed and neutralized the Electoral College. There's a movement which you know about, nationalpopularvote.com, where half the states already of the Electoral College, 270 needed, have passed laws saying anyone who wins the popular vote for president, we will send them our electoral votes. And that includes New York, that includes California passed a law, Illinois passed a law, Connecticut's passed a law. So they're halfway there. They're about 100, a little more than halfway. There are about 192 electoral vote states. And once they get to 270, they neutralize it. But the Democratic Party didn't support this. This is a citizen movement. out of San Francisco with Steve Silverstein. And he has six people going around the country lobbying state legislatures. The Democrats are so stupid and incompetent that they lost two presidential elections in 2000, 2016, when they won the popular vote. Gore won the popular vote. Clinton won the popular vote in 2016. And they still won't put at the top of their list that they want to support nationalpopularvote.com. So, you know, you can't begin to end with the reckless stupidity of the Democratic Party. Imagine ignoring the red states, Gary. We don't want to campaign in the red states. So every 4 years, the red states get redder because the Democrats who try to run in those states, Texas, Alabama, et cetera, have no backing from the National Party. And they just abandon half the country. They've made so many disastrous mistakes because they are dialing for the same commercial big corporate dollars that the Republicans have been dialing. And on military and foreign policy, as you know, they're almost identical. On Wall Street, they talk a different tune, but they're identical. Barack Obama raised more money from Wall Street than John McCain. He raised more money from Wall Street than Mitt Romney. And it's very corrupting.
Final question, because I know you're on a short schedule today. The Democrats are going after Bernie Sanders. The entire media is attacking Bernie Sanders or ignoring him. And what will be the likely outcome in your perception at this moment going forward if they try to undermine Bernie Sanders again and succeed as they did the last election cycle?
Good question. Bernie Sanders is incorruptible. His agenda is nothing more than what has been established in Western Europe and much of Canada. It's a social democratic and FDR New Deal type. He is the front runner. He doesn't take money from fat cats. He takes money from millions of people. The average contribution is $18. You couldn't have a cleaner candidate. You couldn't have a more honest record. He was elected by Republican Vermont years ago. Now they reelect him in a landslide, and the Republicans are going to try to smear him with being a socialist or a communist. Well, what he should say is, listen, Trump, you're a corporate socialist. You bail out Wall Street. You've turned USA government over to big business. You're enriching yourself. You believe in corporate welfare, handouts, giveaways. You're a corporate socialist. And the difference is with corporate socialists, in other words, turning the government over to Wall Street, you can't diselect the bank bosses. But if the Democratic socialists come in, you can always throw them out if you don't like them. And here's the argument I would use, Gary, which Bernie should use when he's accused of that. Say, well, look, give me a half a minute. A lot of people like Social Security. They like Medicare. They like Medicaid. They like public drinking water systems instead of being owned by global conglomerates. They like the fire department instead of being owned by the insurance company. Can deny you when your house is on fire because you haven't paid the premium. They like the police department. They like the Tennessee Valley Authority and redneck country in Alabama and Tennessee. They like the Veterans Administration that has helped so many veterans over the decades. You know, there must be a lot of people who like Democratic Socialists. See, they like the post office, which is there. It's not looking for a profit all over rural America. It's a central headquarters for people to come and get together. There's hundreds of examples, over 1,000 public utilities owned by municipalities. And then you say, you know, public libraries, even public radio and PBS originally were created by the government. And he said, you know, I guess there's a lot of Democratic Socialists around here, and they might call themselves Democrats, Republicans, or conservative liberals. That's going to be the big debate. Now, if they crush Bernie Sanders, Gary, then you're going to have a lot of Bernie Sanders voters stay home. And if they stay home, that elects Trump. Trump should lose in a landslide. I mean, he has so many corrupt invitations for the Democrats to go after him. He should lose just on being a savage sexual predator, which he boasts about. And he continues to say lies, lies. All these women under oath who swore the truth and sued him in court. And these cases are all still pending. He doesn't want to release his tax returns. That would show his connections with foreign interests. and possibly tax evasion and laundering money. But by June, the Supreme Court has to decide the case before they go for the summer recess. So please get fake president. And if you want to empower yourself over your senators and representatives, as we said on an earlier program, Gary, how the rats reformed Congress is a real handbook. I mean, it is a fable. It's trying to make you laugh seriously into organizing, summoning your senators and representatives to your own town meetings, your own agenda, completely reversing the dynamic between you and your members of Congress, and taking back Congress for the people.
Good for you.
And, the book is Gary, they can get this book by going to ratsreformcongress.org. People are ordering five at a time at a discount. They want to have living room discussions. They want to count. They want to matter. They don't want to be told, hey, just listen to these foolish 30-second or 15-second television ads that try to provoke your emotion instead of increase your factual content. Shut up and shop and just trundle to the votes and vote for whoever might have manipulated you the most or given you the narrowest choice. So ratsreformcongress.org. I'll autograph them for you as well.
Thanks a lot, Ralph. And Ralph's other book is Fake President, Decoding Trump's Gaslighting, Corruption, and General BS. And it's always a pleasure to have you on. Ralph Nader.
Thank you very much. Thank you, your listeners and your active audience, Gary.
Okay. We're going to take a break and come right back, and then I won't be able to do all of it, but I'm going to get started, and we'll post the article. It's a part of our series, ongoing series, of challenging the legitimacy of what we consider an illegitimate faux encyclopedia that is there more to engage in ideological, political, economic nonsense. You'll understand more when I'm sharing the information in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to share with you now an article entitled Wikipedia's Violation of the Communications Decency Act. For all the lawyers listening, and we have many, for all the professionals and policymakers, opinion leaders, and activists in this audience, please download this, because this has been fully vetted for scholarship, accuracy, and by our team of lawyers. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to ask you, if you believe this, if you believe that we should amend the Communications Decency Act to make someone who libels someone legally responsible, because right now they're not. First, some background. Wikipedia is promoted as an encyclopedia, and in an attempt to authenticate itself as such, it compares itself to other general and specialized encyclopedias, almanacs, and gazetters. Wikipedia states that it is not to be a resource for unverifiable material. It is not to provide partisan or preferenced material. It is not to promote political policies, nor offer medical advice or guidance. It claims to oppose censorship of any kind, nor does it permit the publication of referencing of personal opinions and blogs advocating ideological agendas and subjective biases. Since Wikipedia is a nonprofit entity and its stated mission is to make all of human knowledge available to everyone, its function is clearly different than internet social media. However, given its popularity and global usage, it is, in fact, serving as a social media resource for third parties to advance their personal views and opinions and agendas. Despite its stated rules, Wikipedia operates in direct violation of its principles. Its content relies upon self-selected and volunteer editors who represent special interests frequently, marginal ideologies like skepticism and political and nationalist philosophies to write and compile articles on crucial and relevant subjects related to health, medicine, and politics. There is no mechanism in place right now that assures objectivity and to screen out bias. Since Wikipedia relies upon third parties who act as unpaid volunteers, little preference is given for scholars in the field in which they write unless they happen to reach the higher levels of editorial administration. Wikipedia admits that while traditional encyclopedias are written by experts, it follows a different paradigm. Theoretically, Wikipedia is supposed to be, to compensate for its inherent weaknesses by requiring references to reputable secondary sources and depends upon discourse to reach consensus among editors. Nevertheless, favored editors and administrators can delete any text they personally disapprove and can prevent permanently in the blocking of any changes or deletions made by others. Consequently, Wikipedia freely accommodates subjective views, personal opinions, ideological groups, and special interests of those who have seized control of the encyclopedia's entries. In this respect, it is our opinion that it functions similar to social media providers like Facebook and Twitter. Volunteer editors are not required to properly identify themselves. There is no obligation for editors to make their names, their educational levels, and professional background public. Many editors and even senior administrators therefore remain anonymous, especially for oversight and decision-making about controversial subjects that address matters of political governance, geopolitics, corporate interests, and the various fields in medical professions. Unfortunately, due to Wikimedia's foundation, that's the parent organization, nonprofit status, and its protection under the 1996 Bill Clinton Communications Decency Act and its subsequent amendment, Section 230, the organization has been able to remain excused from writers' and editors' content that can legally be ruled as libel and defamatory. In many instances, such intentional lies have had an adverse impact on the reputations and careers of many honorable living persons. In the past, it may have been easier to ignore the influence of social media and entities such as Wikipedia and how they have impacted the population. Today, possessing the power to both shape and influence public opinion, as well as the power to censor any and every single dissenting voice or views that are contrary to these internet entities' subjective criteria, is dangerous and already threatening our democracy and freedom of choice. However, the public perception of the internet has been reaching a potential tipping point. Most users have stopped trusting, or at least have begun to question, the truthfulness or authenticity of any factual information found online. Most of the popular news coverage has been in relation to Google, Facebook, and Twitter. A Pew Research Center report released early last year shows as much as 40% of the American users have taken a break from checking Facebook for several weeks, and a full 44% of U.S. users age 18 to 29 have actually deleted their Facebook app from their phones. The CEOs of Google and Twitter, too, have been hauled into congressional hearings to answer for their misdeeds, from the antitrust abuses that crop up in every monopoly to more insidious censorship of narratives not aligned with the heads of these companies' views. It is the latter of these that should concern Wikipedia. Our interviews with former Wikipedia editors and administrators have confirmed our research findings that the veneer of objectivity Wikipedia has cultivated is pure illusion, not fact. Editors who truly want to create a fact-based encyclopedia are finding the Wikipedia environment becoming increasingly hostile. In the meantime, the Wikimedia Foundation claims immunity from the many acts of libel, character assassination, and political activity committed on the encyclopedia. Now let's look specifically at Wikipedia's culture of information bias. our two-year, in-depth, original investigation and subsequent reports into the Wikimedia Foundation's operations and editorial structure have revealed evidence that a culture of secrecy and personal agendas exist as a controlling force behind Wikipedia. Wikipedia's senior administrators operate in secrecy. During the course of our own efforts to alarm the Foundation's legal department and board of trustees of improprieties and libelous content, we have discovered to our dismay that on matters of medicine and health, senior volunteer administrators take orders directly from the Foundation. Criticisms of Wikipedia have included references to cabals that control certain content. This is not an imaginary assumption. Back in September 2001, Wikimedia's Foundation's co-founder and board member, Jimmy Wales, joked about forming a cabal to enforce policy when the site was first launched. His idea became the Arbitration Committee, which some have likened to Wikipedia's Supreme Court, skilled in navigating the dense thicket of rules that has grown up around Wikipedia. The Arbitration Committee and the hundreds of administrators who form another bureaucratic layer are able to control all content that remains on the encyclopedia and what or who is deleted. If these powers were widely known, people would possibly think twice about using it. Or even if they were used fairly, their influence would be welcome. But it's not. And the rules are instead used as a cudgel to enforce ideological conformity, notably the radicalization of liberal and libertarian and agendas that disrespects Wikipedia's neutrality rules that prohibit attacks on conservative policies and legislators who embrace a conservative platform. In the view of medicine, the organization is deeply aligned with the industry, the pharmaceutical industries, AstroTurf groups, and permits every effort to discredit the safety and efficacy of all complementary and alternative medical practices, thereby labeling them as pseudoscience and even quackery. Solving such a conflict in a reasonable manner is hard in any large community, and Wikipedia's policies take extra care to make it even harder. So external factors such as cabal power will inevitably be invoked by some participant. This is common among senior skeptic editors and administrators who often mention skepticism as an exemplar for evaluating health subjects. Solving these conflicts through reason is an unworkable strategy, as any participant can play dirty and drive an advantage. Likewise, seemingly independent editors who are actually cabal members can take turns supporting a position of each other as well as a group, so that no changes are ever allowed. Let me put it in very simple lay language. Let's just say that you are a physician. Let's say you graduated from Harvard and you have an outstanding reputation as a cardiologist. And after practicing 20 years of traditional therapy or orthodox therapy, you see that you're not getting the results that you wished you could see, so you try some complementary and alternate approaches, maybe a plant-based diet, maybe some supplements like coenzyme Q10, magnesium, L-carnitine, and hawthorn, and you find, lo and behold, your patients are getting remarkably improved. So you go to some seminars, and you read the literature, and you start to educate yourself in an area that you were hitherto unaware of. Now you shift the basis of your practice from the traditional model to a more complementary, holistic model. You attend conferences where there are hundreds of other, even thousands of physicians who have done the same thing. Your patients are improving and alive. And then one day, you see that someone has put a biography of a living person, you, up on Wikipedia. But it's all misinformation. The assumption is that you're a quack, you're not qualified. Something's wrong with you, and you think, well, this is wrong. So you go to Wikipedia, and you make changes, and immediately, within 20 minutes, it's changed right back again. You think, well, what's going on? So you write letters, and you get your lawyer to write letters. And for years, there's not a word you can change about your biography, even though you can prove the biography is wrong. Now, if this were a legitimate matter of freedom of speech, you could sue that person for libel. But here, they thumb their nose at you. No matter what egregious misinformation, no matter how derogatory, no matter how spiteful that the attack is against you, there's not a damn thing you can do. You're locked in perpetuity to being maligned, assaulted, vilified, and your lawyer says, I'm sorry, they've got this law that Congress passed, so you can't sue them. And you think, how'd that happen in America? And that's happened to the entirety, an entire field encompassing tens of thousands of board-certified and highly qualified clinicians, to all the participants and practitioners and the patients. Now you can say, but hold on a second, we have 100,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature supporting the scientific validity of what we do. It is safe and effective. Yes, you do. You have the science on your side. You have clinical experience on your side. You had clinical studies on your side. You have the patient speaking on your behalf. And then you have an anonymous person that you know nothing about, but in all likelihood has never done anything in the field of health, has no degrees, background, and they sit in judgment of you and tens of thousands of other people and control the life, in one respect, of hundreds of millions of people in the United States alone. And that makes Wikipedia more powerful than the Supreme Court, more powerful than Congress, as long as Congress remains uninformed. So what we're going to do now, and by the way, I only read a few pages of what is a 7-page, very detailed description of Wikipedia's, what Wikipedia has done wrong and its entire culture has compromised. So what you need to do is download this article, read it, familiarize yourself with it, it's fully referenced, and then reach out to your legislator and say, we're not looking for you to completely destroy this act, the Communications Decency Act. We're asking you to amend it so that the same freedom of speech that all of us in America are guaranteed, but if we use that freedom of speech in a wrongful way and it can be shown we libeled someone, then that person should be sued. And that's all that we're asking. Because then the people remaining anonymous would be sued. They're still going to be sued anyhow. We're working on a whole group of suits right now as we speak, and we'll be launching those shortly, as well as a class action suit. But now let's get Congress, because now there's a lot of conversation on both sides of the aisle, conservative and liberal, that now all these different platforms have misused the power that they were given. But no one has done the research we've done. No one's done 67 investigative reports. We have. For example, I'm starting something new today, just today, and it's this. If you read my bio, which they've been trashing repeatedly, I mean repeatedly, once I started this series, any kind of thing they could say negatively, they've said, all right, so now we're posting the truth. I'm posting video bios. I have 16 to post. Today there are two up there. You wouldn't know that I'm the all-time in the world winner of the Remy Award, which is the most prestigious award that you can receive in independent filmmaking, from the Houston Film Fest. And that's where George Lucas and some of the biggest directors in the world got their start. And got a letter. Read the letter for yourself. Read about all the documentary awards, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, in all the different topics. You wouldn't know this. Read about all the records I broke on PBS. You wouldn't know that either, based on what they said about PBS. You wouldn't know that I broke all records in the history of every station in PBS. Have the most popular programs up to that point. And even to this day, you wouldn't know any of that. So we're going to go to prn.fm, go to Gary Nall. You'll see it right there on the home page. That's the first two We're going to be posting 2 per week so you can see the truth and also download all 67 articles and letters so you're fully informed. All right? We're fighting back with the truth, simply the truth. You know, if they make it seem like you've never done anything, have no degrees, well, you all should know this. I sued and won against 5 entities that said, oh, Gary Noll got his degree from a diploma mill. Who do you think put that information out originally? But the statute of limitations had passed, so I couldn't sue him, or I would have. But they made the mistake of suing me in a timely manner that I was able to fight back, and they all had to apologize when it was shown that not only did I graduate from one of the most challenging universities in America to get into, but of the nearly 30,000 graduates with doctorates and generally in psychology and education, I was the only person in the university's history to get a special honors. Yeah. And the only one to have a multidisciplinary degree. Oh, they left that out. Now, I don't like talking about this stuff, and I don't. But when they make it look like somehow I fell off the back of a banana cart someplace, but that's what they do. They put lie after lie after lie after lie. And sooner or later, each of these people will be in a deposition. They will be in discovery. And then everything about that person, every phone log, every person in their life, you have no idea the extent that I go to when I'm doing an investigation. If there's anything in your background, I'm going to find it. Trust me on that, as they will see very shortly. But first, let's understand something. The most powerful vehicle in the world for telling people about not to ever use anything in complementary alternative medicine, salt quackery. These are the people who have no background or skills or talent in the field, but boy, they do in libel, they do in character assassination, they do in ad hominem attacks. So now we're saying, don't allow it anymore. Protect freedom of speech, but if you decide to use your speech in a wrongful way, you should be held accountable in a court of law. That's all we're asking Congress to do. Make them responsible. Take away the protection. Just like a vaccine manufacturer has protection, take away the protection for the vaccine maker and see how many mandatory vaccines you'll have. Zero. Zero. Because they know they would be sued into bankruptcy with the fraud that they've committed with the whole hype and nonsense on vaccine safety and efficacy and mandatory taking. That's it for today, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.